members, we've been holding hearings on House Bill 2152. We'll continue that. We're going to open a work session. We're going to come back for a public hearing around 2 once we have the amendments drafted. And then we'll have a work session hopefully this afternoon on the amendments once we get them back from council. Open a work session on House Bill 2152. Mr. Warner, do you want to talk about the agreement that we're working on?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Before you start, Paul, as you go through these, will you point out which ones are permanent, which ones are temporary, and which ones involve one-time money?
Yes. Okay. Mr. Chair, we have a summary of a labeled revenue proposal in a format that you're familiar with from the earlier versions of 2152. I do have the vote requirements and the revenue impacts, and then the whether it's in 2152-19. Those amendments are essentially done. There's a couple of changes that are being made now that will be available at 2 o'clock, but they'll incorporate these revenue elements. Some components of the plan, as before, are not contained in 2152. Those same pieces are just as they were before. The charges and fees listed there are not in this bill. The personal income tax components are in 2152-19. There are two significant changes in the dash 19s compared to earlier versions you looked at last week. The one is under temporary personal income tax increase. There's been a reformulation of that, and I'll go through the details of that. Those will be specified in the dash 19s. The other change was on the corporate minimum. I believe you had $110 million in your proposal from last week. That's now at $73.5 million. The other thing that has been taken off is a series of adjustments on the personal income tax in terms of the personal exemption credit, in terms of freezing the income tax brackets. Those elements are no longer in the bill. They've all been will all be removed in the dash 19s. As we go through the elements here on Senator Corcoran's comment, we do have the three components there that are specified as three-year adjustments, and they will run through 03, 04, and 05 tax years. The temporary personal income tax increase does have a caveat to it, and I've footnoted that at the bottom. The third year of the temporary increase does not take effect if the December 2004 revenue forecast projects an ending balance greater than 4%. That would be the December as in a year and 3 months from now. That 4% ending balance would translate into a little over $400 million. So if that is the case, then the 05 temporary personal income tax increase would be deleted. That would reduce your estimate here by about $100 million. But keep in mind your estimate, if the economy is improving faster than the current forecast, those estimates are going to be going up because it's a proportional increase. In terms of the components there that are permanent, the charges and fee components are permanent. The means test for the elderly medical deduction is permanent. The SUV depreciation add-back that you've discussed before is permanent. The increased corporate minimum and the extraterritorial income adjustments are permanent. I would point out, though, that as we've talked about on the extraterritorial income, we do anticipate some congressional action in response to the World Trade Organization ruling that that was in violation of international trade agreements. So you're probably, in all likelihood, in the 05 session to have a new federal definition there to make the decision whether to connect to or not. The there is a proportional reduction in corporate credits as before, and also as the last version you saw of 2152, it exempts farm worker housing and affordable housing from the three-year 20% reduction in corporate credits, and it continues to allow carry forward after that 3 years. There is an increase in the amount of the corporate subsidiary dividend subtraction from 25 to 50% now in this version, and that is for a three-year period only. So that's a temporary. The property tax discount is reduced to 1.5%. It is allocated to the state for the old 405 tax year. That is a temporary provision, but the 1.5% discount would remain in place permanently. It would just, the additional revenue that would come from the smaller property tax discount will flow through to the property tax taxing districts, including schools, which are about 38% of that number. The Education Stability Fund is temporary. The lottery discretionary revenue is assumed to be permanent. That will come in another bill on how that's specified, how those revenues will be collected. The other fund shift group are largely temporary. The Cultural Trust and the Multnomah County Income Tax are both simply new estimates that are done based on other elements of the package. The Tobacco Task Force is potentially permanent if that enforcement leads to a higher percentage level of compliance over time. That should be permanent. The medical provider charge is temporary. It's a transfer specified at $6.25 million per fiscal year. The other fund balances are one time. The state agency savings, those are PERS related savings, are one time, as are the 2020 successor plan savings. And of course, ultimately, those, if you look out in the future, depends on how the PERS savings translate over time and what the ultimate assessments will be. So those will affect the long term. The other fund agency PERS savings are temporary in the sense that they're being used to balance this budget, but they could continue long term savings if they reduce assessment rates.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
So I'll presume, just not to belabor the point, that when we get to the bill that will carry these other provisions, that we'll be discussing them individually then. So the only ones we're focusing on now are the ones that are going into Dash 19s?
Yeah, correct. And
as you'd like to have an opportunity to talk about some of these other assumptions and these others, but they're not included in the bill, so I can wait until we get to the appropriate bill.
Correct.
Senator Corcoran, the bulk of those will come from Ways and Means Committee. The charges and fees is potentially will come for this committee, as will potentially the law. There is a change in the structure of the personal income tax, temporary personal income tax changes, and that's on the second page of your sheet there. And what we've done is, through our income tax calculator, results that you're familiar with, show you how that $545 million is translated into a single tax year. This would be tax year 2003. The Dash 19s will label this a temporary graduated income tax assessment with a variable rate. And down the bottom, that bottom box shows you the rate that will be applied. Now, these are applied to tax liability, not to income. So, for example, if you're a joint filer with adjusted gross income between $20,000 and $40,000, you'll have a 1% increase in your tax liability. Not a 1% increase in your rate, but an 1% increase in your tax liability. So if your tax liability is $100, it'll go to $101. In terms of, then you can see how that's broken down. The single brackets are just doubled for the joint filers, and it varies from 0 to 9%, with a top 9% rate taking effect for adjusted gross income above $240,000. If you can kind of vision how this will work, You'll compute your taxes after credits, just as you taxpayers have always done. But there'll be a box below that, and that box will say "See table" in your tax form explanation, and it'll have this table or something like it in there. And then if your AGI, adjusted gross income, is between $60,000 and $70,000, and you're a joint filer, it'll say multiply your tax bill calculation times 1.04. And that becomes your new tax bill, which would be 4% higher. So that's how the mechanics of that would work. We have the Department of Revenue looking at some language on that now. You can see the examples here of individual taxpayers. On average, for all filers, and keep in mind that you have a lot of filers that are dependents, so down in that low bracket, so you get a lot more filers than families. But the assessment amount on average is $133. And, of course, for all income tax changes, this translates into increased deductions on your federal return for those that itemize. So on average, that will reduce that federal burden by about $23. for a net assessment change after the federal offset of $111
million.
So, on the joint returns, you can see, and one of the things that we calculated in looking on our joint returns, we've been asked a lot about median household income and median family income, so we put those down there for you from the census. But we also went through our sample and calculated what the average total income for joint filers is from our sample. It's about $59,000. Keep in mind, joint filers are going to be much higher average than overall and than single filers. And so that average 59,000 joint filers is going to fit right in between our 50 to 70 group, and so we just listed that down there, a $98 increase in state taxes, a $10 offset for an 88 net annual increase from this proposal. That joint filer of 59,000 is going to be right in the 3% group in terms of their assessment. So those are the components that will be spelled out in the Dash 19s. And again, they raised $545 million over a three-year period. They would spill over under a three-year proposal and raise about another $150 in the 05-07 biennium if it continues for the full 3 years. The other element that you have before you is some new numbers on the corporate minimum. Again, there's no definitional changes here from what you saw before. Just some new rates, and you can see those for C corporations. It's $250 at less than $20,000, and that gradually rises for C corps above $25 million up to $5,000. These are minimum, and would replace the current $10 minimum for all corporations. The S corporations are $250 if they're a million or less. If they're a million or more, they're $500 minimum. And that generates about $73.5 million in the 03-05 biennium.
Thank you very much, Paul. And thank you. Paul stayed through the weekend working with council and with groups. So thank you very much for doing that.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question, a point of order.
Senator Farrelly.
Mr. Chairman, he has the Dash 19 revenue raising measure, which contains the element of an income tax surcharge. Been heard in the House of Representatives.
I do not know, Paul. Do you know if the House has heard that provision?
The revenue proposal, the House Bill 2152, has been heard in the House of Representatives and came to you in this committee. It contains a 3/5 vote requirement on it. It is a revenue-raising provision. The Dash 19s, however, have not been heard in the House. This proposal would be the first time to be discussed in this Senate Revenue Committee.
Mr. Chairman, I conclude from the answer that the revenue-raising measure before us in the original bill has been heard in the House and originated in the House. I also conclude that the revenue-raising measure that we're here to consider in Dash 19 has not originated in the House and has never been heard in the House. And I guess I would ask the chairman, by what logic or mechanism would our action meet Article 4, or Section 18 of the Oregon State Constitution that specifically indicates that revenue-raising measures, bills, would originate in the House of Representatives? I'd like that for the record, Mr. Chair.
Well, it's a good question. We can certainly appreciate the question. We can get Dexter in here. The advice we've gotten from counsel has been pretty conclusive. That we have the opportunity and ability to amend bills, provided that they relate to taxation and have a 3/5 majority.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. Perhaps we could get learned counsel on the committee to explain what a rebuttable presumption is at law, what a rebuttable conclusion is at law.
Are you requesting that?
No, I actually was just I thought Senator Ringo might tell us that what is a rebuttable conclusion. We've seen conclusions in this building rebutted before.
Can I send you a bill for my opinion?
You may. I won't pay the bill, but you may certainly send it.
You want a rebuttable presumption is a presumption that can be rebutted. It's assumed one thing is true, and a preponderance of the evidence can be shown to prove it otherwise.
Mr. Chairman, I think the I would be very interested in hearing the logic. I think it'll be important and germane in processes that would possibly take place in the judiciary.
Mr. Farron?
We'll get that. So I'm concluding that you'd like to hear from counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It doesn't need to preempt the agenda for this morning. But at a near term, I would ask, because I believe that a $1.2 billion revenue package, which includes a tax surcharge, is not an amendment to a bill that would in fact was originated and brought from the House as the cigarette tax sunset extension. So I would tell you that that stretches the concept of amendment to the point where I believe it violates Article 4, Section 18 of the Constitution. I believe this measure should, in fact, originate in the House. It is an entirely new provision that's never been heard in the House. I don't, in my own mind, conclude that you could say that this is anything but origination of a revenue-raising measure in the Senate.
Other questions for Senator Nelson?
Just on the Dash 19, I understand there's out floating in the halls a provision on the provider tax for hospitals. Is it part of 19, or has there been any agreement on that, or where does that sit? Does anybody have any idea?
Senator, my understanding is there have been some amendments drafted on that, but those are not included in the Dash 19.
They're not in the 19. No. Okay, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
I mean, it would be my preference that this hearing be focused on the substance of the bill rather than grandstanding about what may or may not be legal about it. We're going to have legal opinions. Eventually a court may decide. But I would like to spend time on the I would like to spend time on the substance of the bill. And we just encourage that we go forward with that.
Mr. Chairman, in deference to the committee's work, it's not my intention to stop the proceedings here. It's my intention that if the proceedings proceed, that we are at least informed about the logic and the legality, since whatever our deliberations lead to will have to stand the test of court, possibly, and certainly procedurally. And I think it behooves us to try to understand that due to the magnitude of this measure, we should be right in our proceeding. And if we're not right in our proceeding, whatever comes from that proceeding is wrong.
It's an excellent question. I think we're going to have an answer for you momentarily. Other questions or comments for Mr. Warner? Senator Starr.
Thank you. As it relates to the SUV tax or the SUV depreciation add back, does this, we're not only eliminating the state deduction, but we're also adding back, is that
the federal, the three times? No, it's my understanding that we were just, the state portion is what's being added back. There's no change in federal tax. Right?
This is not the times three. Mm-hmm. This is not the times three.
It is not the times three.
Correct.
Dr. Yates, your retirement clock has been
further postponed.
Every question postpones.
Mr. Chairman, I hope we're trying to keep track to make sure that this where the individual does not exceed 1,050 hours,
yeah, that's a good point.
Which he may have before the end of this session, Mr. Chairman.
Very good point.
Mr. Chair, Richard Yates with Legislative Revenue. I think I understood a little different question there than Paul was answering. Paul is quite correct in the sense that an earlier version of the bill had a three times penalty. This one does not. But I thought perhaps your question was, you know, without the federal provision, you would be entitled to some level of depreciation. And with the federal legislation, you're entitled to a much higher level of either expense or depreciation. The bill addresses the total amount that you're allowed by the federal, not the differential between what you would be allowed if the federal hadn't expanded the coverage. So whatever you write off on your federal return, you add back to your Oregon return.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Yates. Dexter from Legislative Council. Thank you for all your work this weekend.
Mr. Chair, members, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office.
Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm interested in having a statement for the record about the mechanism for bringing the bill, which is the Dash 19 amendments, which have not been heard in the House and did not originate in the House, bringing that bill as an amendment to the House Bill 2152, which relates to revenue but has to do with cigarette surcharge or sunset tax. So I guess my question, Mr. Chairman, to restate it, is by what mechanism or logic does the action that we're contemplating in Dash 19 meet the requirements of Article 4, Section 18 of the Oregon Constitution?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, the bill, House Bill 2152, originated in the House, which is the constitutional requirement that you mentioned requires that the bill originate in the House, which this one does, point number one. Point number two, in the House, it was a bill for raising revenue because it increases taxes. As passed over from the House, it was limited to cigarette taxes, but the relating clause for the bill is relating to taxation, and that is the subject of the bill. The Oregon courts have, there's a split of authority amongst the other states that have origination clause requirements concerning whether a House bill, whether a court will look beyond the bill number to see the source of amendments once a bill is a bill for raising revenue. But that issue really doesn't rise here because it was a bill for raising revenue originally when it went over to the House. So it satisfies under any state's interpretation of that provision, it satisfies those requirements. The reason I'm referring to other states, by the way, is the Oregon Supreme Court has never precisely addressed that issue.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would have to ask Dexter or Mr. Johnson if he could give me a degree of certainty. Are you absolutely certain that this measure will survive a legal challenge? So given the fact that there is no precedent for this in the court of appeals.
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, I didn't say that this particular measure there wasn't any precedent for. It's really a question of a House bill that was not a bill for raising revenue to begin with, amending in the Senate to make it a bill for raising revenue. That's where in this state there hasn't been any precedent. It would be a change of more than 100 or 150 years precedent that the Senate be able to amend bills for raising revenue however they see them if the court were to overturn this.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess the finer point which you indicated had never been decided is whether or not the court looks up beyond the bill number and the relating clause. The measure before us, in fact, is a measure relating to extending a sunset date on cigarette taxation. The amendment that we're contemplating is an income tax surcharge, among other things, to raise $1.2 billion in revenue. And so I guess I'm sitting here, Mr. Johnson, I'm convinced that the Senate can originate a revenue measure using the mechanism of amending a bill, and whether or not stuffing this proposal into a bill relating to taxation, that the subject of which is a sunset extension, can be considered an amendment rather than an origination. And I think that's the fine point that's going to be argued in the court. So I guess my question for you is, to what degree of certainty do you believe that this will withstand a legal challenge?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, I am convinced it would withstand a legal challenge. The Oregon Constitution requires the legislature to identify the subject of a bill in its relating clause, and the legislature, the House, chose to do so by describing the subject as taxation, not extending the cigarette tax sunset date. The subject is taxation, and the amendments you're considering would be within that subject.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Chairman, I believe that the courts will find that you cannot finesse the Constitution.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, very much.
Chair?
Hold on 1 second. Senator Ringo.
Just a question for Mr. Johnson. You've worked in the legislature for how long?
Since 1994.
Okay, and amendments like this happen all the time?
Senate amendments that modify bills for raising revenue happen all the time, yes.
All right. And so this doesn't offend your sense of how we ordinarily do business in Salem?
The fact, Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, the fact that you are considering this is not
it's not unusual way. Okay. Thank you.
Another question.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Something to clarify a definition, I guess. There's been talk about paper. This thing refers to as a graduated income tax assessment, and what we hear as a described as a surcharge. Is there some technical, legal, something that makes a difference? I mean, it's raising revenue. We get down to that. But is there a difference between the term surcharge and assessment from your viewpoint?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, there is not legally a definition between the two. And there is a number of other choices you could use to describe it.
Mm-hmm. I would add, Senator Nelson, that there is an economic definition of a surcharge as a fixed percentage of tax liability. This particular measure is a variation where it has the rate applied to your tax liability varies with your income.
So graduated.
It's graduated, correct.
Okay, I just wonder if there was a difference there. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Johnson? Thank you very much. We'll let you get back to work.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing me to put on the record the logic by which we take this action or contemplate this action.
Appreciate it. Further questions for Mr. Warner on his overview of what we'll come back to this afternoon? I'm going to give anyone else the opportunity to testify. We'll come back for a public hearing around 2 today, hopefully with amendments from council, but I certainly want to give anyone else the opportunity to testify. We're in work session, so if you just identify yourself, I'll recognize you. Great. We are in recess until 2 p.m.